It's a great pleasure this morning to introduce my friend, Jockey Loomer Kruger. And I remember her well as an outgoing, caring, giving person, a whimsical folk artist, and a longtime partner to the late Herb Kruger, whom I recall as a warm, friendly man. Jockey's work history demonstrates that she's multi-talented, and those of you who know her know that's for sure true. She's been a nursery school teacher, a bookkeeper, a florist, an antique shop owner, an artist, a writer. And it's her writing we're going to work with this morning. Her writing career spans across amateur theater, the Globe and Mail, and various magazines, including Humanist Perspectives and the 50 Plus magazine. In 2016, Jockey self-published her first book, Valley Child, a memoir. And now at 85, Jockey has just written a novel, Until the Day We Die, which will soon be available from Moose House Publications. And on your order of service, there's a link that will help you keep track and discover when it becomes available. So Jockey's written a contemporary story about a long married couple challenged by the husband's downward spiral with dementia. Jockey will share excerpts from the novel with highlights from various religious views, including Unitarianism, humanism, and others. Jockey, we're looking forward to every word. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. This is a wonderful trip that I've made to the West. Always one of my very, very favorite places to go. So let's just jump right in with the question I'm most often asked, which is whether my novel is a true story. So let's start off with the book's disclaimer. This is a work of fiction. It draws on stories lived, told, heard, and imagined. My focus this morning is to illustrate that disclaimer, particularly in the light of stories lived. So, my husband, Herb Kruger, was a meteorologist with a passion for the works of John Steinbeck. Herb grew up in Regina. His mother was fiercely religious. Some of his early experiences show up in the book, and they belong to the novel's lead male character, whose name is Rudy Hoffman. I grew up in an apple-growing village in Nova Scotia with an older and a younger brother and a close-in-age sister. We were Baptists. But by the time the war ended, my father's religious views had become much more liberal. My own skepticism began during baptism classes when I was 13. And although I went through with the full immersion baptism, feeling like a teenage hypocrite, I later called myself a floating Baptist. My first Unitarian service, when I was 19, was on a trip with my father. We went to the Church of the Messiah in Montreal, a grand building with lovely stained glass and a resounding pipe organ and a sermon based on Doubting Thomas, where the minister extolled the virtues of asking questions. I was thrilled with what I heard. And here's a little more about that church. In 1987, their gifted but troubled organist, in an unsuccessful attempt to kill herself, set the Church of the Messiah ablaze. A fire that took the lives of two firemen. The organist spent 2 years in prison. Now, back to Herb and me. Ours was a second marriage. In 1979, Herb had a major career promotion that brought him from Ontario to Nova Scotia. His wife of 25 years chose not to come with him. I'd been on my own for almost 5 years and was about to open a flower shop. Ironically, my father and Herb knew each other. Both of them were members of the editorial board of the Humanist in Canada magazine. When Herb contacted my father, Dad invited him to the Halifax Unitarian Church. And it was there that my father introduced me to the man who would become my cherished husband. Over the years, Herb and I hopscotched across the country, and we sought philosophical homes in various groups and in various congregations. In Ottawa, we occasionally attended the First Unitarian Church, but more often met in a cozy home setting with the Ottawa Humanist Group. Another move, and we became active congregational friends at the Unitarian Fellowship of Northwest Toronto. Then, when Herb retired, we moved back to Nova Scotia, where for the next 10 years, we seldom made the 45-minute drive to Halifax for Sunday services, but sometimes met with a group of like-minded friends closer to home. In 1995, we relocated to Regina, and for the next 7 years, our warm connection was with Prairie Unitarians and never to be forgotten. Then off to Peterborough in Ontario. And when the UU congregation outgrew its small church building there, we were invited by the Beth Israel Community Center to share their synagogue space. While the Jewish congregation uses the facility on Saturday, the Unitarians respectfully use the same space on Sundays. The next move was to Kitchener, Ontario. I sought out the UUs there, but Herb chose something different and attended SOFRI, the Society of Freethinkers, going to brunches once a month in an old converted brewery, and I usually went with him. 3.5 years ago, Herb died, and Reverend Jessica Purple Rodella from the Grand River Unitarian Congregation conducted his memorial service. 6 months later, I brought his ashes home for burial in the old Regina Cemetery. Now, I've since moved back to Nova Scotia, to the town I left 40 years ago. On a couple of occasions, when services were allowed during COVID, I attended a United Church with my daughter. Now and again, I connect to virtual services from the Grand River Unitarians in Kitchener. And during this social distancing period of our lives, such a closing ritual feels like a distant memory. So now, let's check in on my novel and see if you can spot some stories lived. The narrative takes place in a fictional southern Ontario city. Jenny Allen, a widow in her mid-40s, is a florist. She has been invited out to dinner by recently divorced Professor Rudy Hoffman. Their intention is to discuss the works of John Steinbeck, an author both of them admire. And let's eavesdrop on a bit of their first date, which takes place in the early spring of 1983. And this is Jenny speaking. You said your mother didn't drink for religious reasons. My mother was very devout, Rudy explains, an avid evangelical Lutheran. She maintained a long list of sinful behaviors. Alcohol consumption was near the top. I abandoned her beliefs in my teens, well before my first beer, by the way. Rudy then recounts a distressing ministerial visit to his home when he was 7, following his giggle fit in church. Next, it's Jenny's turn when Rudy asks her, was religion a significant factor in your growing up? She tells him that she grew up in New Brunswick and the family attended a Baptist church. She recalls a particular Sunday school lesson that duly impressed both her and her sister. And this is a true story borrowed from my childhood. The information Esther and Jenny carried home, they shared with their parents. Our Sunday school teacher said Jesus was just like Mandrake the magician, only smarter, young Esther said. Is that true? Jenny asked. Their father guffawed, but their mother was outraged. Don't you ever say that again, either one of you. Mandrake the magician, the very idea. Oh, the ignorance of it. The sacrilege. It's a Sunday school lesson at that. Rudy takes the conversation beyond amusing remembrances. So, Jenny, have you followed in your parents' religious footsteps? And she responds, not really. I accepted Christian teachings about being kind, loving, forgiving. But the rest of it, the miracles, the resurrection, I simply had too many questions, too many doubts. She tells him about taking her 2 young children with her to the city's Unitarian Center for the first time. The minister spoke about doubting Thomas and the importance of asking questions, of being wary of easy answers. Now we're going to go to part 2 of the novel. And we jump from that first date to 2015. Jenny and Rudy have been married for 30 years. Rudy has dementia and is living in a retirement home. Let's hear about religion there as it relates to Jenny and Rudy. It's Sunday, December 27th. On the last Sunday of each month, Jenny heads to Shasta House with a singular purpose: to keep Rudy from getting upset when staff hustle him along with others to the chapel for the regularly scheduled church service. Although he can no longer articulate why he abandoned the evangelical faith he was raised in, finding himself in a church-like setting makes him anxious. For a few years, he sporadically accompanied Jenny to the Unitarian Center, but he felt uncomfortable in the setting. Colored windows, rows of pews, a chancel with pulpit, and a flaming chalice. Until at last, one Sunday morning, he said, "I can't go with you. It's not an answer for me anymore, Jenny. You keep on attending if you want to, but I don't belong there." I'm going to diverge a little bit here and tell you about a promotional booklet that I created in which Adele, a fictional character with dementia, who is actually an alias for me, paints portraits at the retirement home. The main characters portrayed in the booklet have all been given a voice. Here's a bit of what one character, who is silent in the novel, has to say in the booklet. "My name is Pastor Maxwell, retired. A couple of times a year, I preach at Shasta House Retirement Home. They alternate services among different denominations. Every other month, they hold a mass for the Catholics. But really, people who live there, half of them don't know if they're Protestant or Catholic. So they come to all the services, and that's fine. My wife plays the electric organ. I make sure we sing familiar hymns, and I keep the sermon short. The residents get restless easily. Poor dears. Still, I'm very glad to bring them the word of the Lord and give what comfort I can." Now, let's go back to the chapel. Pastor Maxwell and his wife are there, and Jenny finds Rudy in the back pew with the other major character in the book, a new resident Rudy has become attracted to. Jenny taps her husband on the shoulder. "Going to church this morning, dear?" "Is this church?" Rudy looks at his new friend Helga for the answer. "Yeah, we go to church." "But I don't," Rudy says. "Everybody goes to church, Rudy," Helga snarls. "Why are you so dumbkopf?" "Helga, Rudy's not a churchgoer," says Jenny. "Being here makes him uncomfortable. I'm going to take him with me." Helga shrugs. "Do what you want. You're de Frau, his wife." Then it's the first Sunday in January, 2016. Much has happened in the week that has gone by. Jenny takes her battered, aching spirit to the Unitarian Center. She finds the minister's talk predictable about new beginnings. What else for the first service of the new year, she thinks. But how can I start fresh when everything is so unfinished? That same afternoon, as Jenny's about to trudge off to the retirement home, the phone rings, and we meet Jenny's sister Esther again. Jenny learns that it was too cold and snowy in New Brunswick for Esther to venture out to her church. We pick up the conversation from there. I did get to my service this morning, Jenny says. Still attending a Unitarian church? Esther asks. We call it a center, not a church. Not that what a building is called really matters. And yes, I go there now and then. It's a good home base for doubters. You know, Esther scolds, if our mother was still alive, but she isn't, Esther. And beliefs change. At least mine have. Mine haven't, Esther counters. I don't know where I'd be in life without my friends at the Baptist Church. Well, that's the key, isn't it, sis? The friends, I mean. A place to belong. A sense of community. Isn't that what's at the root of why people go to church? Human contact? I find it so interesting that almost all religions preach the golden rule in one configuration or another. One religion doesn't seem all that different from another in some ways. Oh, Jenny, you're impossible. I'll never understand you. It's as though Rudy's lack of faith has somehow eroded yours. Don't blame Rudy. Jenny draws in a deep breath. I'm a pretty independent thinker. Before we conclude this exploration of how personal history infiltrated my novel, I want to leave you with a glimpse of how Esther appears in the teaser portrait booklet. My name is Esther Thomas. Once, shortly after he retired, Rudy came here for Christmas with Jenny. It was a bit of a tense time in a way. You see, I'm a strict Baptist, and Jenny is a wishy-washy Unitarian, and Rudy, well, it's true, he is a very kind man. I mean, he did a whole bunch of handyman jobs for me. And they both came with me to the Christmas Eve service. And I know he was a professor. And he treats Jenny with the utmost respect. But God deliver us. He's an atheist. And that's where I'll leave things this morning. Thank you.